We're reading again this week from Paul's letter to the church in Corinth. Listen with me now for God's word for us today. I mean, brothers and sisters, the appointed time has grown short. From now on, let even those who have wives be as though they had none, and those who mourn as though they were not mourning, and those who rejoice as though they were not rejoicing, and those who buy as though they had no possessions, and those who deal with the world as if they had no dealings with it. For the present form of this world is passing away. The word of the Lord. Her mother ordered pancakes with strawberries and whipped cream. After all, they were on vacation. Why not live it up a little? She ordered eggs and bacon. That's when everyone at the Denny's on Oahu got the chilling message on their phones. Ballistic missile threat inbound to Hawaii. Seek immediate shelter. This is not a drill. Sarah Kimmerly, an Australian reporter for Business Insider, describes what unfolded next for her family as terrifying. People calling loved ones to tell them goodbye forever, a hotel lobby in total chaos, as a voice over the PA system told people, go to your rooms, get in the bathroom, shut the door. A father on the street with his children lifts a manhole and lowers his children into a storm drain, hoping that they'll be safe there. Frantic students at the university racing around the campus, not knowing where to go or what to do. A solitary person, sea kayaking, considers simply staying out at sea as boats race past him, trying to put distance between them and the shore. Sarah's waiter at Denny's nervously said, it might be a false alarm, but if it isn't, there's nothing we can do anyway. Sarah's mother was more worried about finishing her pancakes, defaulting into an obvious state of denial. Her father sat glued to the TV, soberly, earnestly, waiting for instructions for how he could keep his family safe. Her sister cried. She could barely speak. She was panicked. She was afraid. 38 minutes must have seemed like an eternity. That's how long it was before they got the message that it was a false alarm. Sarah says it took a while to make the transition from feeling as if their last minutes on earth were upon them to accepting that no missile was on its way, that everything was clear. The rest of the day, she said, felt shaky. They were wary. They were vigilant. They were more aware, more awake, increasingly angry and reflective. What if it had been real? What should they have done? What does it mean to live in a world where things are on such a razor's edge? What would you do with your last 38 minutes? Would you live differently today if you knew this day was your last? As human beings, it's almost impossible for us to sustain such awareness that life can turn on a dime, that life can end without warning, without any instructions of how to get through a tragedy, a terminal illness, an experience of violence that means life will never be the same. How do we live as if our lives are not our own, when coping with life often means proceeding as if we are in control of our own destinies? Now, as people of faith, as Christians, we're called to live in time collapsed, time conflated, in the layers of truth that every moment entails, layers of history and generations, layers of present realities and perspectives, and layers of future possibilities, full of both promise and peril. Now, that emerging church in Corinth was struggling with the same difficult call to Jesus' followers. Live in the world, engaged courageously, faithfully, compassionately, prophetically, but do not be so immersed in the world that you think this reality is all there is. So Paul is sending the equivalent of a text alert to the church in Corinth. Incoming apocalypse! Get yourself together. Be prepared for the world as we know it to end. This is not a drill. And Paul gives his Corinthian brothers and sisters a lot more to go on than the Hawaiian officials did. If you're married, live like you're not. If you're mourning, live like you're not. If you're rejoicing, live like you're not. If you're purchasing things, live like you have nothing. Now, these are curious, and it's a cryptic set of instructions. My gut tells me if I get notice that the apocalypse is inbound, I'm not living like I'm not married. I'm going to be with the people that I love the most, to hunker down with them. But Paul is talking to this community of Jesus followers about something very different than our gut reactions. Remember last week, we talked about the Corinthian context. Sin City was its nickname. It was a city of extreme wealth, a city of excesses of all kinds. Paul just told them a few verses ago that they're missing the points of how Christians should live if they're treating their bodies as commodities or the bodies of others as commodities, if they're letting food and drink and sex or material things be the organizing center of their lives. This is just a reiteration of that message. Paul is calling the Corinthian church to live immersed in the world without being captive to it. He's calling them to tap into a deeper stream of meaning than the world of material gain or even marital relationships. You see, Paul's clear at several places, marriage can divide your attention. It can be a distraction. The urgency, I'm sorry, Samantha, it's exciting. It's exciting. It's great. Marriage is great. It's great. Fully support it. It's a great thing. The urgency of now for Paul is that those married don't allow their marriages to distract from pleasing God. Don't let pleasing your spouse get in the way of pleasing God. We don't talk about this much, but it's kind of easy for us to make idols of our families, of our parents' expectations for us, of our kids' wants, of our spouse's needs. But Paul is telling them there's an urgency to this way of life that he's calling them toward. Time is growing short. The world as they know it will be passing away. Now, we could look with our 2018 eyes and think, well, this was the ultimate false alarm. After all, about 2,000 years have passed, and the earth is still spinning on its axis, and as far as we know it, Jesus has not been back. I'm pretty sure we'd hear about it on Twitter if he had been. So why should we listen to this nonsense? This from now on, live as if Jesus is due here any time now. It's probably a false alarm. And besides, we can't do anything about it if it's not. The status quo is much more comfortable, much more predictable. Somebody want to get that? What would you do? What would you change if Jesus was almost here? What about your life would change if it wasn't a false alarm? God called Jonah to Nineveh to deliver them some hard news. Reluctantly, Jonah went. And just a little ways into the assignment, the people of Nineveh repent. And God calls an audible. God changes God's mind. And instead of destroying Nineveh, God forgives them. And my guess is nothing was ever the same there. Try as he might, Jonah couldn't outrun the urgency of God's now and the possibility that a new day is dawning despite our fears that all is lost. Last week, three women spoke to capacity crowds in Asheville about their lives. Lives that are immersed in the world but not captive to it. First was Asheville's own Oraline Anderson Graves Simmons. She spoke at the Martin Luther King breakfast. She told the story of being the first African American to attend Mars Hill University. She's the great-great-granddaughter of an enslaved man named Joe Anderson, who was actually put in jail as collateral to force the paying of the university's debt because he was owned by a trustee, the Reverend Jesse Woodson Anderson. Oraline told of being 17, up in her dorm room at Mars Hill and hearing a mob gather outside her window, threatening to burn the dorm down because she was in it, saying that they brought a rope to hang her. But Oraline lived as if they could not stop her. She tapped into a deeper stream of meaning, a deep aquifer of courage and resilience. She was present to what was happening, but not attached to it. She did not let it rule her. She graduated, as did her daughter and her granddaughter after her. Then Michelle Alexander, author of The New Jim Crow, spoke at UNCA. She told of leaving the legal profession because of her research into mass incarceration of African American males. They are 5 times more likely to be incarcerated than whites. Michelle has dedicated her life to addressing systemic racism now as a moral and spiritual sickness, rather than something that can be remedied by reforming our systems of justice and punishment. She walked away from what she knew, from her core competencies, from her training, from her social capital. Michelle lives as if the current ways can and will come to an end. She lives as if she can catch a glimpse of a new world even now. And finally, Patrice Colours, the co-founder of Black Lives Matter, spoke Friday night here in Asheville about how her life completely changed after the shooting of Trayvon Martin. That shooting brought her to a place where she felt compelled to stop living as if violence against black bodies is something that she could accept. Her Black Lives Matter hashtag ushered in a new day, a new way of asking questions about race in this country. She disrupted the patriarchal past of the civil rights movement. She disrupted the homophobia that has permeated the activism of many people of faith. And she disrupted the whitewashing of civil rights figures like Dr. King. Patrice lives as if the old ways have lost their currency, as if patriarchy and homophobia and racism no longer hold sway. She has invited the country, even the world, into a way of being together that is defined by solidarity, not selfishness. and intersectionality, not individualism. Black Lives Matter links oppressions across lines of gender and class and sexual identity and race. And Patrice persists as if the U.S. government has not classified the movement that she helped to found as a terrorist organization. How would your life change if you only had 38 minutes left? How would your life change if your community and your family were being torn apart by state-sanctioned violence? How would your life change if you discovered, if you woke up to the fact that your vocation was propping up a system that was helping make a whole race of people disposable? How would your life change if you let your faith collapse time? If you were able to see the past giving birth to a future that we can taste even now? How would your life change if you believed that no matter who you are, no matter your age, no matter your social position, no matter your prospects in this world, that God is calling you to live in this world as if the world as we know it is passing away? You see, following Jesus does not go according to our plans. There's no long-range planning. No perfect budget numbers. Sorry, Joe. No 401k. No retirement party that buttons up your career so you can feel good about it. No insurance policy that your family will have everything they need into perpetuity. Following Jesus is an act of faith. And faith is nothing if not the destroyer of time. For it is not growing old that is our aspiration, brothers and sisters, but it is growing bold. Bold enough to believe that God empowers the likes of us to live as if we have everything and nothing to lose all at once. Bold enough to believe that this is not a drill. Thanks be to God.